Okay, so we'll start the presentation. Our third speaker of today is BCE with Glen LeBlanc, CFO. Glen used to be at Bell Alliant before joining BCE. I've got to know him through the time, and I always liked how you operated Bell Alliant's financial statements and disclosures, and at BCE it's continued. So in terms of appreciation of the operational metrics that you guys provide, keep providing this us with this information that we need. I always say this so that you don't take away disclosure. So we're gonna keep the session going with Q&A. You know, I unless you want to say anything in the beginning, Glen.
No, Mayor, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. We can jump right into them.
All right. So maybe I'll just start the same question I asked Dave this morning at TELUS is if you can maybe give us an update on, you know, what are the drivers for growth for 2018 and wireless and wireline, and how do you see them progressing through the year and into next year, if we can? You know, what are the things that are sustainable for growth that can continue?
Sure. Well, I'll start with wireline. As you know all too well, that our strategy with wireline is the continued expansion of our fiber footprint. We're at 3.7 million homes today covered with fiber directly to the prem, and we'll pass about 800 more homes and businesses this year, reaching 4.5 million. And that's a pretty big milestone for us, 4.5 million. And why I say that is, we'd like to see ourselves reach about 8.5 to 9 million homes and businesses with fiber direct. And that's going to take us another 5 to 7 years to do so. But in 2018, we'll actually hit 4.5 million, which is 50% of that. So quite a milestone to be able to achieve that all inside a spending envelope that's stayed around 17% capital intensity. That's our biggest driver for growth, is where we have fiber, we're able to take share from our cable competitors. Not only is it providing higher whole home ARPU, it's allowing us to take share. It's allowing us to reduce operating costs. We have fewer truck rolls. We have fewer calls to the contact center. We have higher customer satisfaction, lower churn. So it's really the product that keeps on giving on all fronts, lowering costs and increasing revenue. So we're very excited about our fiber strategy. We're very excited about our whole home strategy. You've seen in late 2017 or early 2018 our announcement on the acquisition of Alarm Force, the second largest security company in Canada. So we think that helps expand our suite of products, our whole home strategy. What we've seen in other territories like Atlantic Canada and Manitoba, where we already had security products as part of our portfolio, is that the whole home churn is materially lower when a customer has a security product with us, as well as their internet and video products. So that's the focus on wireline. Shift gears, Maren, let's talk a little bit about wireless. Couldn't be more pleased with fourth quarter and how we performed with our wireless business in fourth quarter. I think everyone was.
What was your best quarter?
Yes, 175,000 net adds. Best quarter in 15 years. We took nearly 50% of the incumbent net adds in that quarter. Tremendous. So I think what you're seeing.
Now, how are you going to beat that performance?
Well, I think what you're seeing with our customers and with Bell is that our best network message is truly resonating. We have invested heavily in our network. We have a superior network across this country. Our network sharing agreement with TELUS is paying off. We're doing tri-band carrier aggregation, quad-band carrier aggregation, and we're getting speeds in our network that are second to none, and that's paying off. Our strong retail distribution network, that is also paying off. So last year we announced an exciting win that we won the federal government contract, which is 230,000 subscribers that are going to move over to Bell, and we think continued employment growth with the federal government will ensure that number is even higher, which is great news for Bell. And to use a sports analogy, it's truly a four-point game because those customers are going to be lost to our largest wireless competitor. So we see momentum in the wireless business. We see strong immigration continuing in our country, which is wonderful. And, of course, that increased population is leading to more and more subscriber growth in our country. Data growth continues to be shocking at the pace of which we're consuming data. Just in 17 alone, we had 58% growth in data on our LTE network, data growth on our LTE network. So monetizing that, albeit at a slower pace than we have in the past, because I think you're seeing larger data buckets being kind of the norm now. So the ability to monetize at the same rate, meaning that the pace of ARPU growth will probably slow from the mid single digits that we've been enjoying to more like an inflationary rate.
Okay.
So that's a snapshot of where I see growth in wireline and wireless.
The reason I mentioned you're coming from Bell Alliance is we have so little information in terms of financial disclosure around fiber to the home deployment, other than the cost that you guys provide, to compare, fiber to the home versus not doing anything. Because I do get that question a lot, is how much capital return can we expect to see on fiber to the home? So in the mature markets that you have with fiber, mm-hmm. can you talk about the experience you've seen?
Mayor, for me, that ship has sailed. We no longer sit around asking ourselves about whether or not the return on investment on fiber makes sense. Fiber is our future. Fiber is going to ensure that we're able to provide customers what they want in their home well into the future. Hard to believe, but now when we look at the average home, there's 12, 13 connected devices in the average home with estimates as high as 40 by 2020. You think of your own home now and the number of devices that are connected in the home. All of that requires sufficient bandwidth into the home. Where we have fiber, we are performing exceptionally well. Where we have fiber, and I'll go back to Atlantic Canada, we have taken significant share. And in many markets in Atlantic Canada, see ourselves north of 50% in both video and internet. And that's the power of what fiber will do for us. So when I think about the return on investment in fiber, I compare it to if we do nothing, we are not going to be able to meet the customer's ever-increasing need for speed. And that is going to mean that we lose the broadband war to our cable competitor. If you lose broadband, you lose video, you lose home phone, you lose the home. So for me, I couldn't be more pleased with how our fiber is performing and how exciting it is now to hit that 50% milestone in 2018.
Is that a big enough number to turn your overall wireline business into positive growth on a steady basis organically?
Sure, we're there now. Each quarter
on the residential.
When
you combine enterprise and residential.
I would say we're there now. When you look at our performance quarter after quarter, we have positive EBITDA performance in our wireline business. And I know some of that has been fueled by our acquisitions, but I can tell you, backing out the acquisitions, we're still driving positive growth in our wireline business. And you'll see that in calendar 18. We've lapped the acquisition of our MTS in 2018. It's now been more than a year. And as we disclose our 2018 results, you'll see that we still are able to achieve positive wireline EBITDA, and it is all a product of winning the broadband home and the success that we're having now. We're about to hit another exciting milestone in that we will have sufficient fiber coverage in Toronto to mass market. In 2018, we will hit about 1 million homes completed in Toronto, but in first quarter we're going to get to what I would say is sufficient enough to mass market, And you'll see that in late Q1, early Q2, where we are going to be able to advertise fiber is here in Toronto, and that's going to be an exciting time for us. It's our largest market, and it's been our market that frankly our cable competitor has had, superior market share in, and I think this is going to be a game changer.
So how do you market the product? Is it through aggressive pricing? But because you have the quality advantage,
correct.
I guess. So how do you go trying to get that market share you're talking about? Is it just through pushing your the product's quality?
Yeah,
quality,
it's product attributes.
Not the pricing.
No, I mean, I think you've seen from the past how we've marketed this product. Certainly, there are short-term upfront promotions that are used, but the bottom line is the product is superior, and we will use product attributes as our key marketing tool. It's a better video experience. It's certainly a superior internet experience, and now we just launched a really interesting product in a whole home Wi-Fi that's improving the in-home experience. So it's about product superiority, and that's how we'll market this, coupled with short-term promotional pricing.
Yeah, because we've seen in the past, companies come out with aggressive pricing for a few months. Then the customer, when the bill increases, then he gets a bill shock. And so, because we've seen this in Atlantic Canada with some of the promotions.
Yeah, it's a great point, Mary, you make. And I think what we need to be sensitive of in our industry is that customers expect and are accustomed to getting short-term promotions. And if it's 3 months and it's 6 months, customers know that. When we extend these promotions into long durations of time, and we've seen them, as you alluded to, sometimes 24-month promotions. 24 months is not a promotion. 24 months is a permanent price to a customer, because there's no way at the end of 2 years you remember back that you were on a promotion. And when the bill changes, it is sticker shock. 90 days, 180 days, I think are very manageable promotions, and customers are accustomed to seeing and remembering that there's been an upfront promotion and that their price will change. So we try to stay away from those long 24-month promotion periods. I don't think that serves us well in our relationship with the customer.
Okay. You talked about fiber is here in Toronto. When is fiber going to be here in Montreal?
Well, we've already announced that Montreal is where we move next. So 2018 is about completing Toronto, and then we will move to Montreal. 14 to 15% of Montreal is already complete with fiber.
So we are not in
your home. We'll get right on that.
Send it
there. We'll send the truck this afternoon. So we'll move to Montreal next. The beauty of Montreal is that it's mostly aerial physical infrastructure, and that is a big advantage for us when rolling out fiber. Toronto is about 40% buried, 60% aerial, and when you're rolling out fiber, if you can hang it on the telephone pole, the construction process is so much easier than the big dig. And if you have to dig up ground, or you're relying on 50-year-old buried conduit, only to find out it's crushed and it's broken, and you have to do in-ground drilling, it's a slower, more costly process. So Toronto was a market that we had to address. We're excited that we've addressed, but I won't be sorry to see it behind us, because it was a challenging construction city, and Montreal will be much, much easier. So I think you'll see us much more active in Montreal in the coming year.
So 2019 would be the time when you can mass market potentially, or
in Montreal? Well, no, because the construction
a little
begins.
Bit late.
What you need to be careful of with mass marketing is customer dissatisfaction. If you have 20% of the city completed and you start mass marketing, then customers that get excited about the product they just seen, they call in to get it, only for us to tell you can't have it. So you have to make sure that you pass that 65 or 70% mark. And that you have a very clear roadmap for when neighborhoods are going to be complete, so that when customers call in, even if it's not available today, I can give you a reasonable date. So, no, we won't start mass marketing. We will start construction in 18 and into 19 in Montreal, but the mass marketing will have to lag that.
Okay. I asked this question to tell us this morning about how do you see Shaw being different and potentially entering the wireless market? What are the strengths and weaknesses that you see that you can use against them versus what you saw with Quebecor in Montreal? Every time we ask the question, the companies say, well, we're going to be less affected by Shaw than what we saw with Videotron. And it's the same answer by all three incumbents.
Agreed. So that's my answer.
We're going you can't say it.
But I'll expand on that.
What are the puts and takes with Shaw versus?
Well, one thing I don't think you can overestimate the impact was the network sharing agreement that Videotron had with Rogers when they first started, and right now Shaw does not have such an agreement, and I do not believe that such an agreement is imminent, and that's given us great competitive advantage. So that's one. Two. Network superiority. We're 2018. We will have 92% of Canadians will have access to LTE Advanced network with Bell. We're the only one doing tri-band and quad-band carrier aggregation. So our speed advantage now is becoming incredibly noticeable. I think that resonates with customers. When you think about our retail distribution, our retail reach, and you compare that to Shaw, it's quite substantive differential there. So, they'll be a formidable competitor. They have been in wireline for many, many years. To date, we have seen modest impact from that, and I think our fourth quarter numbers speak volumes to that. I'm very pleased with our Q1 performance and how things are going. So, look, it's not the first competitor that we've seen launch wireless. We've seen it in the East with Eastlink. We've seen it in Quebec, of course, with a very formidable competitor in Videotron, and we're not worried of our ability to compete.
Your call will begin
it's about network superiority. It's about continuing to invest in our service and improving the service experience and as I said, distribution. And then the final point is you have to remember that early days, the aggressive marketing is all about price when you enter the wireless space. I can guarantee you cannot live profitably off $37 ARPUs. You couldn't at BCE. If we're not north of $42, $43 in ARPU, I could tell you that even with our scale, we wouldn't break even. And that doesn't even consider the capital outlay to build an LTE network or to acquire spectrum. You'd be north of a $50 price point. So early days, it's about taking share at a low price point, but they have to move up the ARPU food chain to be profitable. And when you do that, you start running into our flanker brands and ultimately our core brands. So we're well positioned. We're very pleased with the performance of our Bell Wireless assets, of course, the performance of Virgin Mobile, and we've just launched another new brand called Lucky Mobile, mm-hmm. which is a prepaid brand, which we think is going to serve us well in the market and keep us competitive at a lower price point, lower network performance experience.
Okay. 5G build-out already started in a way. It's going to continue. When do you expect to have a completed 5G network that you can market to consumers?
Well, when you refer to 5G, wireless 5G. Look, it's a number of years out, Mara, before you're going to see that. But we are building 5G today, as you say, because 5G is really nothing more than small cell deployment and on fiber backhaul. So often, I like to remind investors that all of that work we're doing on our wireline side of the business as we drive fiber deeper and deeper and deeper into our networks is really foundational wire 5G deployment, isn't it? We're going to have the fiber in our network that allows for a simpler and easier 5G deployment, but we're still a number of years out. We're doing trials. we think we're well positioned, as well positioned as anyone in this country for the rollout when it happens, because of the fiber infrastructure we have in place.
Any questions on wireless before I ask a question on wireline? On wireline, one of the parts of wireline that has been an issue for BCE is your strength in enterprise and your market share that was very large in that business. And we're seeing pricing pressure in that part of the company. What are you doing to offset those price pressures? And I'm sure cost cutting is a material point, but can we expect that business to stabilize?
The enterprise business has been a challenge, but Merit, it hasn't been a challenge because we're losing share. We're doing extremely well in that space. We're still the dominant enterprise service provider in this country, and we haven't lost share. But your point is a valid one. What we're facing is we're facing a lot of repricing pressure on RFPs. So that's forced us to be very aggressive in our cost cutting and also very aggressive in our introduction for new products and services to meet the customer's needs, whether that be Internet of Things and connected cars and data solutions. But to be frank, until you start to see sustained GDP growth north of 3%, until you start to see significant hiring in this country by enterprise customers, that and not just our federal government, then that's going to be a challenged segment of our business. And I don't see it looking a lot different in 18 than it did in 17. So it's going extremely well. We just converted several large enterprise customers over to our Total Connect product, which is all about innovation and I think giving the customers more of what they're asking for. But there's still a little headwind in front of us, and maybe it's slowing a bit. Feels like a breeze maybe, but it's than a wind. But ultimately for us, it's about employment growth in this country. And when we start to see sustained employment growth, I think that segment will start to be a little easier.
Okay. How much more? Yes, we have a question.
General question regarding the communication.
Canada has, without a doubt, some of the best wireline and wireless networks in the world. It's something that we are incredibly proud of at BCE is our network performance. If you travel and you use your wireless device in other countries, I think you will notice a significant difference in performance than you would home here in Canada. Our networks are second to none, really, in the world. And when you look at our fiber network, we're reaching a point now that our wired networks are also superior to much of what you'd find in the world. Our government has done a great job of trying to ensure that Canadians are connected. And they've spoken at great length about their desire for all Canadians to have access to superior networks and superior services. So I think when you look at the government's focus on their announcement for Connect to Innovate Fund is a great example, where $500 million was put forward by our government to ensure areas, rural areas in our country, have access to superior networks. With that type of expansion and ensuring that all Canadians have access to great wireless and wireline networks comes investment. And if we're going to make that investment, then we need return. And I think our government understands that and doesn't want to interfere with the investments that are being made in this country to ensure Canada has some of the greatest networks in the world. So it's about balance. It's about working with the government. I'll give you a clear example of how I think we can do this together. Our government came out and was very, very clear and supportive of how proud they are of the wireless networks that exist in this country. But they did say that they are worried about wireless pricing and ensuring that all Canadians, regardless of your income class, have access to affordable wireless. We launched a new product called Lucky Mobile that operates on the 3G network, so it certainly doesn't give you the same product experience that you would get on our Bell-branded products. But it's a low prepaid entry point, $20. Within 2 hours of that announcement, the government issued an unprecedented, for me, I haven't seen it before, press release where Minister Baines congratulated Bell for ensuring that all Canadians have access to affordable wireless. So that's an example of where I think we can listen ourselves. We can't be ignorant in our industry to government's asks and the government's needs, but I think there's a pathway forward if we work together. And this government is all about infrastructure, and this government is all about investment. So I think it's a great question, and I think there's a path forward together.
Great. You know, being the largest media company in Canada, you have to be expecting a question on media, which mm-hmm. is seeing pressure from different levels in the marketplace. How do you sustain the top line? Can you sustain the top line? The bottom line is we've seen a lot of restructuring. You've been taking out costs. What should we expect of that business segment in the next couple of years in terms of growth?
Look, we're very pleased with how we performed in our media business. But you have to remember, the reasons we got into our media business was the vertical integrated strategy. And the reasons we got in 7 or 8 years ago are the same reasons that we're still in it today, and we believe are working for us. Yes, media is challenged, and I think we've seen it in our fourth quarter results where for a number of quarters we were able to sustain, you know, EBITDA growth, and we were positive in our media business, and now, you know, we probably have one foot on either side of zero with a little bit of pressure as we've seen in fourth quarter. But when you consider that we're the largest TV provider in this country, we're the largest internet provider in this country, that means that we buy the vast majority, a big portion of our content from ourselves. And with ever-rising content costs, being a content owner is powerful when you are the biggest BDU in the country. So I think it's about managing our costs. It's about ensuring that we're launching new products and we're taking advantage of these products to ensure that the media business shifts with the changing consumer shifting. And what I mean by that is people are watching TV differently. They're not watching less TV. They're not consuming less content, but they're watching it differently. Hence the reason we launched AltTV, a streaming TV service, to ensure that we're capturing those cord cutters and those cord nevers so that we can monetize that advertising over a new platform or over a different platform. So change is in front of us, and we feel it. You know, as I say, it's probably a foot on either side of zero right now from a growth perspective. But when the reasons we got into it remain today, we're a massive content purchaser. We're one of the largest advertisers in this country as well, and we advertise on our own media properties. So, you know, we're very comfortable with our suite of assets and how our media assets are performing.
Would you still put more money into that segment, or you would probably look to invest your capital elsewhere going forward?
Well, I think, Mayor, you've seen the challenges we had with the acquisition of Astral. We have a significant market share, and I don't believe we could move materially in that space without running into some challenges with regulation. So there's a minor tuck-ins here and there. We're always looking at expanding our portfolio, but not materially.
Okay, and in terms of M&A, we saw you go into home security. We saw you go into different geographies, Manitoba.
Sure.
What other verticals could we see you go into?
Well, if we look back at what we've done in the last number of years, obviously the privatization of Bell Alliance was very successful for us, and this is what we do when we've seen an opportunity to expand into Manitoba. we were there and are so pleased with how that acquisition has played out, not just from a synergy perspective, but how well introduction of new products and services into Manitoba has gone, and how well customers are reacting to the fact that they have access to maybe products that they wouldn't have otherwise had.
Improved services
there. So if there's very few of those assets that remain in Canada, if there ever was assets that look like Manitoba's.
Well, there's one next door.
That comes available, we would certainly be there to kick tires. I think the government has spoken in Saskatchewan that it's not something they would like to actively pursue right now. However, I can assure you that if that was a decision changed, that would be something we would look at. It's what we do. I think you've seen from us is that we like to stick to our knitting inside our Canadian borders, and that's what you can expect of BCE go forward. Alarm Force was a great acquisition, second largest security company in Canada, but it wasn't a new vertical for us. It wasn't new space. We had security services in Atlantic Canada. We've had security services in Manitoba, and both of those assets we purchased. And we really were impressed when at BCE when we purchased those two assets in Bell Alliance and MTS at the churn experience that was occurring in those footprints where the whole home, connected home, had security.
With it, yeah.
With it. So hence the move on Alarm Force, very excited about that. In our wired footprint, I think it became evident that we divested of some assets to TELUS out in the West, as we're excited about what security, the connected home, can do for our wired footprint. So we're not looking to sell those products standalone.
So we've seen other companies talk about in the U.S. having more products to reduce churn, and as you said, security is one of them. Other ones are content, or what other verticals you can offer the consumer to make him stickier that you can add to the portfolio?
Well, I think right now it's about the Internet of Things. And
about healthcare? You know, TELUS is in healthcare.
Yeah,
that's something.
It's obviously not a vertical that we've chased before, and I don't think you'll see any change in that strategy from us. Right now, our focus is about winning the whole home. And I think the products that you're seeing us launch today is ensuring that the broadband experience, it's all about broadband, is superior. And what I mean by that is we're bringing fiber directly to your doorstep and able to deliver phenomenal speeds like a gig. We're seeing more connected devices into the home. One area that we're really excited about is improving the in-home Wi-Fi experience. And we just launched a new product called Plume, but it's the whole home Wi-Fi. A great product that we've launched. And how it works is it's an intelligent Wi-Fi extender is what they are. They plug into an electrical outlet, and they speak back to the modem. You may have seen our advertisements on TV. I have them in my home, and I've had them for some time as a trial, and what a tremendous product. They are constantly monitoring your network. They're monitoring the needs of speed throughout the house and augmenting and optimizing all the time. So it moves bandwidth to around the home to where the needs in the home are, and that's where our investments are going, Mayor. It's about ensuring that the broadband experience and broadband growth, that we're ready for it. It's hard to believe 12 to 13 connected homes, the connected devices in the home today, but as I said, that could be 40 or 50 in 2020 or 2021. So we have to make sure that the in-home experience is ready for that. That's the type of area. Yes, a question.
So as your fiber to the home rollout moves from Montreal, move from below ground to above ground cheaper, you got a few tuck-ins here and there, but nothing major.
Well, no, I would say tail off. I had mentioned that we're hitting a very exciting milestone of 50%. What that says is we've got 50% more to go. I am so excited about the fiber rollout. You know, if we can do 600,000 to 800,000 homes a year, and the faster we go, I think the healthier we are. So for me, it's about growing and ultimately achieving that objective of 8 to 9 million homes, and the faster we get there, the happier we are. But I do believe we can do it with that 17%-ish intensity, but I would not be aggressively trying to reduce that, because I think the end game is finished. Look, like all companies, we're dipping our toe in, and we're trying to understand what it means, and we're investing in that. I really couldn't comment specifically on or provide publicly what it is we're doing, but sure, we're investing heavily in artificial intelligence and understanding how that's going to help us expand products and services, particularly in the enterprise space. In one area for us that I think is exciting is that when we think about artificial intelligence or we think about cybersecurity, we have access to knowledge because we have the largest network in the country. We see what's transpiring with traffic in this country. We see it before anyone else. And I think that onto itself can be a product that we will eventually be able to sell. You think about attacks that occur in the network. It's an ability for us to see it first, and therefore, who wouldn't want that? What bank wouldn't want to know what's transpiring in the network? And can we monetize that product? And actually, we do it for ourselves, but how do we take that product and actually sell it to large enterprise customers? And I think it's that type of evolution, but, you know, we're making investments. For me, it's how do we turn investments, artificial intelligence, into products that we can monetize. And that's kind of the path we're on.
Ben, can you talk a little bit about deleveraging and the path to lowering your debt position? As you look at these investments that you have in front of you, as you look at potentially more spectrum auctions coming up, where do you see the leverage ending 2018 or 2019?
Well, you've heard me say before, Mayor, that we're very committed to our investment-grade credit ratings. We're very committed to the ratings that we have today and are certainly not going to take on any actions that jeopardize that. All of that said, let's look back before we look forward. Look at the pressure we've had from the low interest rate environment on our pension plan. Hard to believe, but in the last decade, we've put $5 billion of voluntary contributions into our pension plan. Now, the good news is...
And one-time payments.
Yeah, one-time payments. Yeah, well, one time is I always expected. I've been predicting rising interest rate environment for 10 years. I think I'm about to be right, finally.
It's going to happen.
Finally, I'm right. And the good news is our pension plan now is virtually fully funded on a solvency basis. So when I look at cash pressures or the use of capital into the future, I see that burden, and it truly was, you know, a sizable cash burden being behind us. We talked about M&A, and I think we've done a tremendous job of being opportunistic and adding great properties to BCE. But when I look out, I don't see the same magnitude of Bell Alliance and MTSs in front of us that, or media assets that have been behind us. So when I look forward, I think there'll be an opportunity for us to bring leverage down from the 2.7 mark it is today. However, I think we're in a low interest rate environment. I'm not going to be overly aggressive in doing so. I think that it can happen in a paced way. It can in a migrating way towards something.
So there's no specific objective you're trying.
But publicly, you know, our objective is to get the high end of our policy is 225. I think moving in that direction is over a couple years is my objective. I don't feel that we need to be in a rush to get there, because I think our credit ratings are safe and where they're at. But when I think about capital usages, as I mentioned, we don't have the pension burden. We don't have the same size M&A activity in front of us, so I think it's going to free up some capital to get the leverage down over the coming years.
Well, certainly, from my point of view, it certainly feels like BC is more nimble, more leaner than what it was a couple of years ago. In terms of wireless, you've made a great success in Western Canada. Wireline, you're still working on costs. Last question on cost is there any big cost reduction plan that we can look forward to that can be put into place, or you just continue your...
Well, we're always looking for efficiency opportunities, but the biggest one that lays in front of us is what fiber is doing to our company and how it's changing the way we service our customers. As we build, we've been in business since 1880, and we've relied for the last 138 years on a great copper network, but it's run its course. Served us well. It's probably time to build a new network, and that's what we're doing. We're building a new network. But as we complete that network and we hit milestones like 50%, what we're seeing is the costs of servicing are so materially different. It's a brand new network. It's a fiber network. It's not affected by humidity. It's not affected by rain. You know, when you're dealing with some copper plant that's out there now that's 40 and 50 years old, we might as well park a truck on certain streets when we hear rain coming, because I can guarantee you that network is going to be problematic and troubled. So when I think about the telco of tomorrow and I think about BCE, in 5 or 7 years' time with a complete new fiber network, I think about a fraction of the repairs, a fraction of the truck rolls, a fraction of the customer calls into our contact center. I think about a self-serve tool. I think about left in place. In other words, when you move out of your home and I purchase your home, all of the fiber infrastructure is in there. All of the wiring is in there, and it doesn't require a truck roll. It literally is a flip of the switch to provide you service. I think about over-the-top delivery of video service or streaming service versus a set-top box, and I see a cost structure tomorrow that is materially different than exists today. So I know we've been at this game for a while and carving out costs, and nobody is better at it than George Cope. I can tell you that. He is remarkable at mining costs of a company. But I'll often get the question, well, haven't you taken all of the low-hanging fruit out of your company? And I actually think we're just getting
started. There's more in the front than...
We're just getting started. When we have a sparkly new network built, I think we're going to be able to run this company in an entirely different way than we did 20 years ago.
So let's just get a truck to go to El Bizard and do a fiber.
You give me your address. We'll see if we can get someone over today.
Thank you, Glenn.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you, everyone, for coming.